The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Again, we can still say good morning, especially for those who arrived later. Welcome. After the first sit, I asked you to bring to mind the sense of spaciousness and generosity of spirit. I wanted you to explore this, especially because I want to talk about mudita, or sympathetic joy, which is one of the four Brahmaviharas, or heavenly abodes, that we don't talk as much. And I find it's a very fruitful area to investigate. So the best way that I can explain what, or to me personally, what mudita is generosity of spirit. When there is a sense of generosity of spirit, mudita is present. We are able to be happy with the happiness of others. That's what mudita is. And I think it's very interesting that in Buddhism we have a term that specifically talks about the ability to be happy for somebody's good fortune. I don't know of this existing in any other language except German. German has one verb that actually is mudita in action. Gönnen means I'm able to be happy for somebody else. So if you think of the order of the Brahmaviharas, sympathetic joy comes right after compassion, right? Compassion is the ability to feel the suffering of the others. Sympathetic joy is the ability to feel the happiness of others. Now, interestingly enough, I think for most of us, sympathetic joy is more difficult to practice than compassion. And the reason, if we had lots of time, I would love to hear from you, what's your experience. But the reason for me is that mudita shows you very nakedly where you get stuck, i.e. where there is the pettiness of our spirit. And that's kind of tough to see, right? It's like, ooh, you can just feel the whole body contracting when you're not able to be happy for somebody else. Somebody gives you a good news, they got a job that you would love to have, and notice what happens in your body. Suddenly you can't breathe deeply, and it's just this little thread of voice comes out that barely says, oh, I'm happy for you. But, you know, it's not really the case. So I like to think of mudita being like a spectrum. Think of it of a 180-degree spectrum, where here on the far left is our ability to feel mudita without any difficulty, very uncomplicated. For example, you toss a branch or a stick to your dog, and your dog happily goes after the stick. You feel joy, right? It's very uncomplicated. I don't think there'd be too many people who couldn't feel mudita at watching the joy of the dog just running after that stick. So that's the far left. What do we find at the far right, where we just kind of look at it and say, oh, no, that's it, that's my limit? One example that comes to my mind in the far right would be, imagine your significant other coming to you and saying, I fell in love with somebody else. How quickly could we feel mudita? Would be pretty tough, right? So it's interesting to explore why. And the other thing is, where in this spectrum do we begin to get stuck? I mean, I gave you the far right, the one of the toughest, where most of us mortals would be incapable of feeling mudita. Looking at the far right, it's like, why are we unable to feel mudita? On the most gross level, we have the delusion that we own our significant other. My partner, my husband, my boyfriend, my girlfriend, etc. So that's already a problem, right? Or I identify myself as I am the wife of, etc. So identification. But more connected to the practice is this inability to understand some of the basic concepts and most challenging concepts in Dharma. One would be anicca, you know, impermanence. If we really understood impermanence, we would understand in that moment, I had this love for a while, now it's gone. Like everything comes and goes. It's here, changes. But how difficult it is to truly internalize anicca. Or another very important concept of Buddhism would be the sense, I'm taking my time because my throat is starting to act up a little bit. So continuing, having these two opposites, we can all spend time investigating where within this spectrum do we begin to get caught. If we have the habit of investigating, we can practice using the very easy experience of the dog that I mentioned as a point of reference. This, I know how it feels to really practice. Oh, thank you so much. I'm going to take a pause. This is a singer saving grace. It's a spray. Thank you so much. So we take the easiest example as a point of reference, and from there we see how is it, where is it that we begin to get stuck. There are certain things that we can observe, simple things. I love this example or anecdote that the pediatrician David Kessler tells of his granddaughter, from whom he learned a lesson, and he recounts how Emma, 4-year-old Emma, was playing Candyland with her friend Jenny, and her friend, so it's just the two of them, Jenny was just one step away from winning. And Emma jumps up from her chair and says, "Oh, Jenny, I hope you win." So think of it, how wonderful. This 4-year-old has not internalized the concept, if they're winners, they're losers. She was embodying mudita at that point. So in our society, you know, games are about competition, sports. But how about just practicing playing games just for the fun of it, just for the joy of playing board games, for example? We can watch ourselves get caught also with things like image, my self-image, anything that happens around me that somehow threatens my self-image, I get contracted. Anything with that I identify with is going to be a slippery terrain for us, right? If I identify as being a good teacher and I don't get a compliment, somebody else gets the compliment, bad news. I'm not going to be able to take it well. So very important to notice, where is it that we identify who we are? This is who I am. Mudita is a wonderful way also to free ourselves from self-preoccupation, right? If we are able to constantly open up and have this generosity of spirit with other people, there is much less self-preoccupation. And then we discover this wonderful thing that if we're really practicing mudita, we discover that happiness is not a limited commodity. It's plenty of it. There's always some to be had because there's always somebody who's having good fortune. So to finish, one thing that I think it's important, especially with the examples that challenge us, when we get to the difficult ones where we just cannot be in touch with that generosity of spirit, just know, okay, I'm unable to feel mudita. But remember, it comes right after compassion. So then we bring the compassion in. So we have compassion for ourselves. And it's okay not to be able to feel mudita right away, right? That's another thing where we have to be forgiving with ourselves. Like with the extreme case that I mentioned to you, I think there are very few who instantly could feel mudita for the partner or the spouse. But if we set our mind, inclined our mind, eventually, when I get over the jealousy, the grief, the sadness, the sense of not being good enough, not being lovable, that I will get to mudita. And that's good enough. That's mudita. It's okay if we can't do it immediately. So to finish, I want to read to you a quote from Naomi Rachel Raymond. I like this very much in the sense that it's an inspiration to look at the place of our pettiness that hurts. You know, we don't really want to see that part of ourselves, and learn how to work with it and transform it. An oyster is soft, tender, and vulnerable. Without the sanctuary of its shell, it could not survive. But oysters must open their shells in order to breathe water. Sometimes, while an oyster is breathing, a grain of sand will enter its shell and become a part of its life from then on. Such grains of sand cause pain. The oyster, however, does not become hard and leathery in order not to feel. It continues to entrust itself to the ocean, to open and breathe in order to live. Slowly and patiently, the oyster wraps the grain of sand in thin, translucent layers until, over time, it has created something of great value in the place where it was most vulnerable to its pain. A pearl might be thought of as an oyster's response to its suffering. Not every oyster can do this. Oysters that do are far more valuable to people than oysters that do not. So just take a few seconds in silence.